This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. As you know, The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling. I want to thank all of you for your continued support in not only listening to the show, but also for the great feedback about the show and the guests. As a reminder, we invite you to join our Facebook page at R2R Podcast. That's R, the number 2, R Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at R2R Podcast and Instagram at AJShark49. In this episode, I'm chatting with Christina Mond Lakhani. Christina is an entrepreneur, writer, speaker, and the co-founder of Mind Valley, a global school that delivers transformational education for all ages. In this great conversation, you will learn about her mission to help others create an extraordinary life through authenticity. We also talk about her new book, Becoming Flossom, and what it means to live by your own rules. Have a listen and enjoy. Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Can you share with us what are some of the reasons that you have seen from those who wish to pursue authenticity and happiness? I mean, is it a particular event that may trigger someone to pursue happiness, pursue authenticity? Is it just something that's innate within them that wants to move in that direction or gravitate to that direction? Or since we're all people and we're all different, it could be a number of different things, right? It could be it can vary. What are some of the things you've seen where that would cause people to want to pursue maybe a bad relationship, addiction? What are some of those?
Well, I must say that probably I didn't pick my area of expertise very carefully because people don't pursue neither happiness nor authenticity. It's just not what people want to learn in general, which is funny and maybe a little bit counterintuitive coming from me. Well, one of the things, and they're different. I mean, happiness and authenticity right. Not exactly the same. So we can't talk about them, lumping them together. So if we talk about happiness, contemporary society doesn't value happiness enough. We want to be happy, but we don't want to admit that happiness is something that we might want to pursue like a goal, like we would want to start a business or start a family. And it's, I find it incredibly ironic being in personal growth for 20 years. The number one rule about anything in personal growth, whichever area you take, is that if you want to succeed in something, you have to work on that. Parenthood. I just mentioned parenthood. You said, yes, it's important. You want to be a good parent, you have to study it. You have to work on it. You can't randomly be a good parent. You want to have healthy body, you have to work on it. You want to be wealthy, you have to work on your wealth mindset, whatnot. Everything in personal growth starts with your desire to improve that area, except happiness. If you listen to contemporary discourse about happiness, then you will hear more often than not the idea that happiness is not to be chased, because then you're not going to get it, which I find incredibly ironic, because if we want to be happy and we don't work on that, how is it going to happen? And I do suspect that we want to be happy more than we like to admit. Because for one, if I were to ask, what would you want for the person who you love the most in your life, unconditionally love, you would probably say you just want them to be happy. You might want a whole lot of other things, but ultimately we want our loved ones to be happy. And we want it for ourselves as well, even if it's not a fashionable thing to admit. When it comes to authenticity, there is a little bit different dynamics why people don't seek authenticity. Generally, we don't consider ourselves inauthentic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And the only reason why somebody wants, and when that happens, when that breaking moment happens, people usually don't go for authenticity. They just are so tired of being someone else. They just want to be themselves. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people don't go for authenticity per se. What I teach, at least how I present it, is I teach self-love and self-acceptance.
Yes.
And that is the topic that unites both, because I think that you cannot truly be happy unless you learn to love and accept yourself. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be happy if you don't like who you are. And also, loving and accepting yourself is probably the end point of seeking authenticity.
I see. So I have a couple follow-up questions there. One, yes. I'm gonna step back to happiness, and then for the second one, I'll move on to authenticity. So in stepping back to happiness, what are your thoughts on? I mean, so many different. You know, so many people say, I just want them to be happy, or I want to be happy, or if I get this, I am happy. And to me, all of those expressions and terms, it implies that happiness is a destination, you know? and I want to know, what are your thoughts on that? To me, it doesn't seem like happiness is a destination, because it's something we continuously work on, and we're not going to be, let's say, doing cartwheels every day, that happy, right? But being at peace and content with your life, with who you are as a person, and in touch with who you are from your core inner self, that takes constant work. I mean, is happiness a destination?
You know, I would be fine if it was a destination. Unfortunately, that's not even how we look at it. We think it's a prize.
Which is
even worse, because destination at least could be the logical conclusion to your journey, which would have been okay in a way. But we look at it as a prize, as if it is something we have to earn and deserve by doing all the right things, yet not actually aiming at happiness. So and we learned that interesting idea from childhood. When we are born, at a very early age, we are told, study well, behave well, do the right things, get married. Well, girls say get married, have children. And happiness is implied. If you do that, you'll be happy. So that's one of the problems. But you very rightly noticed that we have to define what happiness is.
Yes.
I don't think cartwheels is happiness. I don't think elation per se is happiness. And there are so many joyful emotions that we could talk about, whether it's excitement or anticipation or just pure joy, pleasure. There are a lot of, these are just a few from the top of my head. But what I try, when I talk about happiness, what I try to impress on people is that if you equate happiness to an emotion, then by nature it's going to be elusive, because emotion is not a state. It's a fleeting moment.
Right.
The moment, if you feel an emotion and the moment you start expressing emotion or looking inside and trying to figure out the emotion, it changes.
Right. Yes.
Because that's the nature of emotion. They change unless you actually bottle them up, then they'll stink.
Right. Yeah.
So you equate happiness to emotion, then naturally it's not going to be forever.
No.
And that is a very silly pursuit. So I suggest, or I advise people to look at emotion, at happiness as a state rather than emotion. Because state is a much more stable condition, and you can work on a state. And what I find very interesting, I'm not a psychologist, but I love psychology dearly. So what I've noticed that psychology defines depression as a state. But there is no universally accepted definition of something opposite, of the state which is content, which is at peace, which is enjoying the moment, right. Which is maybe at peace with the way life is, enjoying right. not just the pleasurable moment, but sometimes the very humanly moment of discomfort.
Right.
We don't have a definition of that state.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And that is the opposite side. You know, of depression,
I think so.
Right?
Yeah, because depression is a very numb. Well, it's numb in the beginning, but it's a very destructive state. But there is the opposite of that, and it is not neutrality. I don't believe in neutrality per se. I think neutrality is more akin to apathy, which is actually the first step to depression.
Is it neutrality maybe borderline on indifference?
Yes, and indifference apathy is not a very positive state.
No, it's not. No. Oh, I appreciate that insight on happiness being a destination or not being a destination and the work that we must do, you know, having it more as a state, not as an emotion. And it seems so natural that society kind of ties happiness to emotion. So and that's an incredible insight that you shared, which, you know, you would advise that it's more of a state. It's more manageable, it's less volatile and that sort of thing. So Christina,
and
thank
it's
you.
Trainable.
I'm sorry, trainable?
And it's trainable, like
yes.
anything. You can can practice, you can train, you can learn, you can you can do something about it. It stops being so elusive.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, now stepping back forward to authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I heard you mention when it comes to being authentic, you know, there a lot of people in society don't think they're inauthentic. So therefore, they are not pursuing authenticity. There are some extreme cases, to your point earlier, that someone may say, I'm sick of living like this, or, you know, and that sort of thing. Now, in tying the two together, okay, as you were mentioning this and personal growth, one of the things I thought of is, like here on the show, we talk about the four cornerstones to personal growth. Mm-hmm. And in our minds, the four cornerstones to personal growth is service to others, humility, gratitude, but the foundational piece of all those cornerstones is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And self-awareness, I think, would play a significant role in someone discovering that, you know, it's that key piece between someone who doesn't think they're inauthentic to someone who says, I gotta stop living like this.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the role that self-awareness plays in that authenticity?
Well, I think that awareness is a superpower. Mm-hmm. I actually have even a talk about awareness being a superpower. Mm-hmm. I also believe that awareness is probably the basic, the basis, not the basic, but the foundation of transformation. You cannot change things unless you notice them. You cannot want you won't find the motivation to change. You won't find the reason to change. You won't even find that anything needs to be changed unless you are aware. So I do start any kind of training on personal growth and transformation with practice of awareness. In fact, I'm a huge fan of awareness. I don't call it self-awareness per se. I talk about awareness in general.
Okay.
These are nuances, because self-awareness is in essence awareness plus introspection, where you actually turn that awareness inside yourself.
Yes.
And it is definitely an absolutely fundamental skill. Now, does it necessarily need to authenticity? That's a further question, because we are inauthentic partially because we are unaware.
Right.
But very often we are also inauthentic because it is hard, it is scary to be true to yourself.
Yes. Yes. And that's the piece I want us to unpack a little further. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, because you can be aware of all the wonderful things that you're doing wrong and
yes.
do nothing about it. You can be aware that you want something more, but you're not doing mm-hmm. anything about it. You can mm-hmm. be aware that you're not standing up for your values, that you are, let's say, compromising something which is important to you and still keep living like that. Of course,
yes.
I believe that if you are truly aware and if you practice awareness with curiosity, you will find sufficient motivation to want to change that. And there's a huge chance that you will start unpacking that whole thing. But awareness per se doesn't guarantee a change. Change
right.
has to come with a level of well, not just introspection, but just with a level of understanding. So I have a formula for transformation, which is experience plus awareness. Well, and actually plus support system plus your environment, because you know, knowledge, for example, it's good, but it doesn't change your life.
Right.
And those people who have been in personal growth for a long time, they've heard so many wonderful ideas and they pretty much know everything. But if your life doesn't change, it's because that knowledge stays cognitive. It doesn't descend to your living experience. It doesn't, you know, cross over to your cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
For
mm-hmm.
you to actually, for the knowledge to change anything about your life, you have to have an experience.
Yes.
Experience allows you to change your paradigm, to change the way mm-hmm. you see the world, to
mm-hmm.
understand the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
But experience alone, without knowledge, without the awareness, without the framework, is just that. It's experience. It's maybe enjoyable. It's maybe painful. It's some kind of emotions, but it's not a transformation. Transformation happens when both experience and knowledge are combined. But I also add support system to it, because I also think that you absolutely need some kind of support in your life, whether it's a person who loves you unconditionally or you know, or your environment, which will support you in transformation, because transformation is a scary process in essence.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, people toss around the word transformation in all different directions and areas, you know, as if it's like a flip of a switch, when really it's not. It's a truly, truly comprehensive process where you're not constant. I mean, the trend of transformation isn't constantly inclining. I mean, there's steps you take back, you come up, you go back down, you go up, you know, but as long as that overall trend is an incline, I think you're making some progress. I think another element in that transformation would also be a behavior change.
Mm-hmm.
Someone, I mean, has the support system, they have the experience, they have the knowledge, but also the behavior change in making that transformation, I think would play a part as well. Is behavior part of that, or what are your thoughts?
I talk about habit formation as well, because it's such a topic that a lot of people are super curious about. But I
mm-hmm.
would expand it a little bit beyond just behaviors, because when we talk about behaviors, we imagine immediately imagine how you move, how you eat,
mm-hmm.
How you meditate, how you do anything.
Yeah.
But transformation actually is not just on that level. I think the deepest transformation is sometimes invisible. It's how your thought patterns work. And you
mm-hmm.
can say, you can call that behavior as well to a degree. But let's say how you interpret events, how you react to conflict, how
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, strictly speaking, called behavior, but these are behavioral patterns, or they are patterns of thought which create your living experience. And I think they're much more important than a lot of other things. We are so fascinated by things which are visible, because they're so much easier to comprehend and to work with. It's much
mm-hmm.
harder to work with how you interpret events in your life.
Yeah,
it's much
yeah.
easier to work on how you eat and how you exercise.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So, broadly speaking, behavior definitely has to change, but I think we should go beyond the superficial and see our thought patterns also as a nuance of behavior, I would say.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And that's unpacking the behavior a level deeper to the thought patterns. So thank you so much for sharing that, Christina. That's greatly, greatly appreciate it. One thing you mentioned a moment ago that I found completely fascinating is, and this was what I was getting at, right? As you said earlier, it's very difficult for someone to have that self-awareness, to take that hard look in the mirror and own, you know, hold themselves accountable and own up to the part they've played in events, the choices they've made. Not all are good. The different things and events that have happened in their life, they may have been a cause of a lot of them, you know, and that's hard, but that is one of the first steps. You have to be aware. And I love how you just, you know, you mentioned awareness and not just self-awareness, you know, because there is a level of importance for awareness for things and elements around you. Mm-hmm. And so as you were saying that, I was thinking, well, how does someone get over the hump of that hard look in the mirror, understand that long term, this is something that will benefit me? It's part of the break you down to build you up type of mindset, which is the type of mindset I go on when it comes to personal growth. And what you mentioned was approach with curiosity. That is fascinating. And I truly, truly mean that. Approach with curiosity. Then hopefully when you take that approach properly, it sounds like it kind of removes that stigma of self-loathing and deprecation and beating yourself up, right? Because that's not productive either. Is that what you were getting at when you mentioned curiosity?
You know, you poked at a very deep topic, and we could go so far into it.
I know, yes.
We don't have time for that, but yeah.
right.
You know, I would say so. When I talk about self-love, and I teach self-love, I teach three very important qualities, I would say qualities or maybe skills, but it's more characteristics, I guess, which are absolutely necessary for you to learn to love and accept yourself.
Yes, yes.
And they are honesty, kindness, and courage. But I'll leave that at that, because what I want to say is, as I was listening to you, it's very important to understand that you don't need fixing. Nobody needs fixing, because fixing implies brokenness.
I see.
What people usually need is healing, which doesn't imply brokenness. It implies humanness. And this is something which we very often misunderstand. And having been in personal growth for 20 years, I know that we are very hard on ourselves when it comes to personal growth and transformation. If you listen to yourself talk, we keep saying, what's wrong with me? Why am I wrong? What's broken with me? Well, we don't use the word broken, but we imply brokenness.
Yeah.
Because we are fascinated by trying to fix ourselves, and it doesn't work like that.
I see.
Because you see, our fascination with basically, when people go to personal growth, they want to be a better version of themselves.
Yes.
So they create this picture. I call it the picture of perfection, although it's mostly women who associate with perfectionism, but men also have their version of perfection. Their version of perfection sounds like strong, a leader very often, you know, inspirational, leading people, making, you know, creating huge stuff. It's also a picture of perfection, even if they don't use the word perfection. I mean, men don't use the word perfection as much as women. But the thing is that our fascination with the picture of perfection is the very reason why we feel that we are broken and we need fixing.
I see.
Because when you are fascinated and you are obsessed with becoming a better version of yourself, whenever you're faced with something which doesn't correspond to that better version of yourself, you don't know how to deal with that. And nobody teaches us how to deal with discomfort.
No. Right.
So the most natural thing that people do when they face something uncomfortable, when their reality is unpleasant, is that they lie to themselves.
Yes.
And in psychology, there is a whole lot of this, a whole plethora of mechanisms how we lie to ourselves. They're called defense mechanisms.
Yes.
So we lie to ourselves in a very simple terms. We, rather than dealing with a problem, we pretend that it doesn't exist, or we change the situation. We pretend that this is something else. We kind of sweep it under the rug.
Yes.
So every time that you face yourself not being the best version of yourself that you're aspiring to be, you don't know how to react to that. Mm-hmm. So rather than dealing with that, rather than facing your dragons, you just push them away. And you focus harder on perfection and you work harder and you keep telling yourself that you're so broken. So imagine you are trying to fix your health and you are following a diet and then, you know, your willpower resource gets depleted and you break down and you eat whatever you were supposed not to eat.
Right, right.
Your reaction is that in addition to breaking down, you're actually... you're angry with yourself. You don't like yourself for not right. following through. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that fascination with perfection creates the dark side. It creates the dragon.
Okay. No, I see. And you know, this is a great segue to my next question. I wanted to talk with you about your book, Becoming Flawsome. Okay. Because you mentioned, you know, we don't need to be fixed. It implies that, you know, that we're broken. We just need healing. And so your title, Becoming Flawsome, first off, I love it. It's a great title, you know, and I'm sure I'm wrong when I'm speculating this, but when I first read your title, to me it seemed to imply that, you know, number one, none of us are perfect. We talked about perfection, right? And you help people in the book in coming to terms with being secure with our flaws, but we can still be awesome. Flaws and awesome, I guess. can you break that down for us in the main message of the book?
So, you know, I can't take credit for that word. I found it on internet, but it was an orphan word, so I adopted it. Sure. I also realized that there are a lot of different definitions to flawsome, and I haven't actually given it a proper definition, and I think I have to correct this mistake eventually. It's so funny because my book is titled Becoming Flawsome, but I never spent two sentences explaining what it means.
Okay, understood.
But it is about being imperfect, for sure, and I think by the end of the book, people understand what I mean.
Yeah.
It is about being imperfect and not mm-hmm. just... So it's a process. And I want you to understand that it goes beyond the superficial, because we've all seen that stereotypical picture of a person who's like, yes, I'm imperfect, so what? Love me. I love myself.
Right. Yeah, we have.
But that's also a little bit too simplistic and not what I'm talking about at all. Okay. Not at all okay. what I'm talking about.
No, you go
what
deeper, it sounds
like. About is, you see, I talk about honesty, right? You have to be honest if you want to learn to love yourself, because you really need to know who you are loving. You cannot love an ideal, an image, a picture of perfection. If you love someone, if you truly love them, once you're beyond that period of being in love, you can only love a person if you know who they are.
Right.
And if you're willing to love them imperfect. Right. So the same applies to yourself. If you want to learn to love yourself, you first have to understand who you are. And we touched very briefly upon how we lie to ourselves, but this is such a wonderful topic, because once you start discovering it, you suddenly realize, like, you know, mm-hmm. everything is an illusion.
Yeah, you do.
For me, it's an illusion. So it actually also gives you some liberty and freedom to be at ease with that. So what? You might be wrong. You might be imperfect. So what's the big deal? You're human.
Yes.
So, yes. But going beyond that, going beyond accepting your flaws, what I want to achieve by my book is to help people look their dragons in the eye and mm-hmm. realize that their biggest strength, the most valuable, unique qualities probably lie in those very dragons that they have been afraid of all their life.
Okay. That's pretty profound and thought-provoking. The very things that they're trying to avoid or turn their back on.
Very often hold
their strongest strength. Qualities.
Their biggest strengths, their most unique value to the world. Well, a very simple example would be, I do not know if you've seen X-Men. I have children, so I've watched a lot of
I've movies. Seen one or two. Not many.
But they have a character there. She's called Mystique, and she's blue. Her natural form is blue with red hair.
Yes.
And she's obviously she has super qualities, like super strength and whatnot. Right. But because she wants to blend in, she walks through the movie. In the beginning of the franchise, she walks as a blonde woman played by God, I forgot the name of the actress, but as a blonde woman, blonde, yes. Young, beautiful.
Yes.
And then there is this one episode where it's complicated, of course, to describe the episode, but basically her friend tells her that by trying to look normal, she's wasting half of her attention on things that don't matter. And when her life depends on that, there's this moment when she really has to save her life, and she turns into that blue creature.
I see.
So the point is that very often by trying to be something what we are not, we're depriving that attention from things that really matter.
And that takes energy too.
Yes.
It's taking up energy. It's taking up time and the focus on what really matters, it sounds like.
Yes.
Wow. I love the example with X-Men. Now it's going to inspire me to watch X-Men a little bit more, but
it's from X-Men First Class, just in case, because there are a lot of movies.
Well, thank you. Oh yeah, there's a bunch. The franchise has a bunch of different, you know, movies that make it, right? And so you said First Class?
Yes.
Wonderful. First Class. All right. Man, fantastic. That, I'm going to think about what you mentioned earlier, probably for the rest of the day, regarding, you know, the dragons that we run away from and turn away from, contain most cases our strongest qualities and strength.
It's not an easy thing to, I guarantee, because, you know, The point, I guess, and of course, we are talking just 5 minutes, and then
sure,
I write a whole book about that. The point is that very often by denying, you know, we have to make a difference between bad habits and characteristics. Mm-hmm. There are bad habits which you can drop, like smoking, or I don't know, like eating something which is unhealthy to you, or whatever. Bad habits are easy to eradicate, but then there are qualities about you. And if you work all your life on trying to eradicate a part of you, on trying to heal you out of being yourself, then obviously you are depriving yourself of a lot of energy. You are not accepting something which is just integral part of you. And sometimes that something is not a pleasant thing to acknowledge, to admit. And you can talk about, let's say, perfectionism. It's an easy one. Because perfectionism is, we know that it is actually preventing a lot of people from doing things. It can actually make you procrastinate or not go for the challenges. But it is an easy dragon to admit. Yes. Because we also wear perfectionism as a badge of honor. But you see, a few years ago, I heard this wonderful phrase, I'm recovering perfectionist. And I was calling myself recovering perfectionist until I realized that perfectionism is not a bad habit in my case. It's my integral part, and I cannot be recovering from being myself.
I see.
Rather than trying to eradicate that part of me, I just accepted that, okay, this is what it is. Can I live with that?
Right.
Can I learn to work with that? And what can I, how can I use that that peculiar quality of mine to my advantage?
Right. How do you manage it in such a way?
Yes.
To where it's a strength and not a deterrent, right?
But I'll drop a worse one, and maybe I won't unpack it. I'm also a very leisurely person.
Okay.
I don't like stress. I like very slow mornings. You can call it lazy. And this is not a bad habit.
No.
It's not a bad habit which I'm going to eradicate, because it's just part of me. Yeah. But I've learned to work around it, to still be productive.
Yes.
And actually, you know, if you think about the evolution of civilization, human civilization happened because we try to make our life easier.
That's right.
So in a way, you can look at it as harnessing laziness.
That's a very unique perspective. I mean, Yeah, because I love the example of laziness that you shared when it comes to how you manage it to where you can still be productive, but not really change or eradicate part of who you are, which is you like nice,
slow mornings.
Yeah.
And I also don't like to do horrible jobs, which are boring me out of my wits. I'm because of that quality, I'm so good at delegating. I'm so good at building teams.
And that's where your strengths are. See, so you're exactly. leveraging your strengths.
You see, yeah. or I could live all my life fighting this part of me, which is just there. No matter
which is expending a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. So, Christina, can you tell us about live by your own rules? Was this like a 30-day learning type crusade?
Yeah, it's a quest. It's a program, mm-hmm. Online program. I actually don't remember how long it is, but probably it is 30 days because I recorded it quite a few years ago.
Okay.
It was... I have a few newer courses right now, which I like much more. But that mm-hmm. was my initial first program, which I recorded as result of me working in personal growth and transformation for such a long time with the best teachers. And I just thought mm-hmm. I have to distill it into something. So, of course, it's talking about living life by your own. Well, I mean, the title is self-explanatory. It's about yeah. living life by your own rules, mm-hmm. and it touches upon some of the topics which I discovered later much, much more in depth. I do mm-hmm. talk about happiness and self-love there for a very brief moment. But that course kind of started me on the path of discovering those topics because I think that probably when it comes to living by your own rules, being yourself and valuing your own happiness are probably the most important parts about it.
Yes, I agree very much so. And one thing that I took from that title is, you know, living by your own rules, but, you know, you want to be armed with the tools and the insights that you teach, okay, that you write about. You know, once you have those tools and know more about yourself, then I think you really can live by your own rules. You know, and in such a way that doesn't hurt anyone outside of your circle, you know, and you have your boundaries, you have, you know, things that you pursue, you have things that you don't, and leveraging your strengths and energy, right?
You have this wonderful talent of touching upon such profound and deep topics. And right now you touched upon another distortion of our industry, which is, you know, the distortion of boundaries and authenticity. I'm sure you have heard, you have met very unpleasant people who insist that they're just being true to themselves, but actually what they're doing is that they're hiding behind that beautiful idea. They're just being rude. And,
yes.
Uncivil and inconsiderate of other people. Living by your own rules is not contradictory to being nice, to being considerate, to being compassionate, to being pleasant in society. I mean, you don't have to be rude to know your values. You don't have to be rude to say this is important to me.
Right.
You don't have to be uncivil. So I think that this is such a wonderful topic, and maybe I should think about it more, and maybe write a book about that, because this is the extreme end, and I don't think it has much to do with authenticity or you loving yourself. I think actually almost all the unpleasant things and horrible things that we do to each other, they come from lack of self-love rather than the abundance of self-love. But yeah, living by your own rules, it actually means that you are probably a valuable member of society who actually has a meaningful life and makes a meaningful contribution.
100%. Yes, 100%. So, yeah. And at face value, the title, I I'm sure this quest really breaks down what that truly means, as you explained so eloquently earlier, Christina. You know, not causing trouble, not hurting people, you know, and having the boundaries, but still living by your own rules and being productive and a member of society. So thank you for qualifying that and sharing that insight. I really appreciate it. I hope this conversation inspires you to write another book. You know, I'd love to have you back on the show to talk about that book. As
my next one.
Yeah, your next one for sure. You know, speaking of which, how can the listeners follow you and learn more about your great work and reserve a copy of your book?
So my book is available on my website, kristinamand.com/book, but Kristina Mand is written in an Estonian way. So it's with a K, Kristina with a K, mand.com/book. And of course you will find me on Mindvalley because I'm a co-founder of Mindvalley and I'm omnipresent there. I mean, not all the time, but of course I pop up there every once in a while, along with other wonderful teachers. And all my social media handles are just Kristina Mand.
Oh, fantastic. We'll make sure and put those social media handles, the website, the web address to reserve a copy of the book. All that good stuff will be on the episode show notes for our listeners to click and connect with you as they are listening to this wonderful conversation. Kristina, I want to thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you sharing your insights from your 20 plus years of personal growth background with our listeners. Our listeners are people who are goal oriented. They're looking for ways to improve within themselves, who they are. And you've shared some things that I have no doubt has resonated with them. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
I hope so. And thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure for us as well. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, if you have a loved one, a colleague, a neighbor, a friend who seems to be just down in the dumps, not quite themselves, going through dark days of despair, not quite sure where to go or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them, because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. Number one, you're not alone. And number two, there is always hope. The road to rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have. The Road to Rediscovery is an AJ Shark production.